Yeah, so they have the Joker captured. And he blows up the place and gets out, and it's all part of his scheme, and more cops are killed, and people are on the mafia payroll. Mm-hmm. Cops have always been, and that was something that Dent made abundantly clear earlier, is that that he used to be an investigator with Internal Affairs, and that Gordon's major crime unit that he was that he constructed after he was promoted to lieutenant at the end of the first one had a lot of people that Dent had investigated in it. And Dent basically says, well, I couldn't pick any cops. You know, he conveys that he's investigated everybody, I guess. Mm-hmm. Which probably gets into Dent's whole, like, either super duper clean cut, by the book for every second style. You know, he probably investigated Gordon because he was partnered with Flask or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. who, and knew that Flask was on the take. But was no rat. Gordon is not Gordon is not this idealistic cop. Gordon is very much like sort of a, you know, what needs to get done needs to get done.
And I mean, he lets Batman do some very illegal things. And all in the name of justice or whatever. I mean, he just wants what's right to happen, no matter how.
Yeah, the ends are justifying the means, apparently. That ends up becoming an issue later, is that because some of those cops are on the take with the mafia that Gordon picked. He didn't, they weren't all, you know, beyond reproach. Right. And so people get captured, Dent gets captured and set up by the Joker, and so does Rachel. And then the movie just does what it does, and I'm like, okay, cool. It was worth it to bring her back, because that was the only way I was going to give that a pass, was if... I mean, you know, we said we were going to spoil, so we're going to get into the end of this movie now, and we're just going to talk about everything. They kill people in this. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, people that matter. People from the first movie die. Or maybe just one person from the first movie dies.
Well, you're meant to assume that two people died for a while, or at least one other person died for a while, which was one of the things, like, one of the things where you can tell they haven't killed off a character. This is a big spoiler section here, but...
They don't do the funeral?
Yeah. Usually, like, I mean... They kill someone, and they show, for instance, Commissioner Gordon, or Lieutenant Gordon, jumps in front of Harvey Dent when the Joker turns his rifle on him at the funeral for the judge, or what was it?
That was for the old commissioner.
That was for the old commissioner, yeah. And he takes a bullet for him, right? Or you think he was taking a bullet for him. And then they actually do the thing where they went a step further, and they show him telling the family, and the family's crying and stuff, and... Batman sitting up there in the stairs, and he takes off.
And that's where you as an audience start thinking, whoa.
Oh, maybe they really did do it. Because you first think, oh, they must be fake.
But then you start thinking, well, they're making their own rules up in this series. Yeah. You know, like, they're not really beholden to any comic book geek about what needs to happen.
And then they start showing Nicky Cat is the talkative, oh, please don't kill me guy in the passenger seat of the SWAT truck, mm-hmm. and you never see the driver's face. It's got a mask on it, and you start thinking, I wonder who that is. You know, mm-hmm. like, at first you start thinking, I wonder if it's one of the Joker's guys. Mm-hmm. But then it becomes obvious that he's shooting at their truck. So, I mean, he doesn't really care. He's been killing his guys all movie long. But, and then when he goes over to Batman, and suddenly there's a shotgun in the back of your head, I was like, oh, it's Gordon. Mm-hmm. You know, it has to be, because they haven't shown the person yet.
And, I thought it was the other guy, but yeah.
Which other guy? Oh, Nicky Cat. Yeah. Come on, who's Nicky Cat? Seriously.
I know that guy's recognizable, right? Yeah, it's weird that I'm like...
Anyone who had a speaking role was pretty much a recognizable actor.
And that was kind of cool and strange, though, but yeah.
Nestor Carbonell got a job in a big-budget movie.
I know, weird.
Weird,
That might be because, well, he's been on, like, episodes of Lost, I think. So you get them realizing that the Joker's captured
while he's there.
He's got Dent and he's got Rachel Dawes
because of the cops that are on the take. Because
the cops that are on the take, yeah. Which is all sort of Gordon's fault that he, you know, didn't vet these guys hard enough. But at the same time, it's like, you know what, trust is trust, and in the end, you have to trust.
Is that anyone's death in this movie, you can spread the blame on multiple people. Every time Joker says it wasn't his fault, it's true. Like he kind of like was the person who made it happen, but it was never 100% him. It was always because of actions of other people.
Well, and
a lot of it was because of Batman. A lot of it was because of Gordon. A lot of it was because of Dent. Like, you know.
But only in that criminal justification of, you know, hey, if you didn't fight the terrorists, then the terrorists wouldn't kill you, right? I mean, or no, fuck you. So, I mean, that and they have to know that doesn't work. that logic is not a logic to fall into. And Batman almost does, and a lot of those guys do. And I mean, that's it, because it's a tough thing to sit there and see. And that's where Alfred's important too, is he says, you do, you wear it, you endure, just endure this, because right. What are you going to do? You're going to just...
So what happens is Dent and Rachel are both tied up to their equal areas of...
barrels,
drums of oil with
some kind of liquid gruesomeness. Yep. Yeah. And it's like, where are they? And Batman beats the hell out of Joker for a while. Like, and you think maybe he'll kill him, but then right. It's like, then you won't find out what you need to know. And then obviously, you know,
yeah.
Joker's not going to, I mean, you're not going to get anything out of someone. I mean, I don't know how interrogation works in proper real sense. Well, sure. But Keith Olbermann apparently read a thing where somebody did this to themselves. I know that Christopher Hitchens did it recently,
yeah,
but a long time ago, one of the guys in the administration did it and was saying, oh, you know, it's scary, it hurts,
yeah.
It's not fun. And then Olbermann was talking about how, like, you know, wow, look at that. And it's like, wow, you mean really they're doing something to hurt something that could hurt somebody that
yeah.
they don't like?
Yeah.
Wow. Well. Anyway, I don't understand. I don't understand how that all works in IRL, and I don't think it's a tough thing to do. I mean, you know, I used to threaten to beat the shit out of my brother when we were little kids, mm-hmm. and he was being a dick, and he was the Joker. He would just laugh about it. He would laugh because it's like, what can I do? I can beat him up a bunch, but I don't get I don't get my result. I don't want to hurt him, just like the Batman doesn't want to kill the Joker. But you can't. How do you get the results out of him? They have to give them to you, and the Joker just does because that's what he wants. He doesn't want, he wants the game to be played out, and you get into Spider-Man 1, make the choice, the girl or the people, you know, in this case it's make the choice, she's at one place, and Dent's at the other.
Right.
And he says where they both are, and Batman runs out of there, and like you said, in the very human side of it, he's like, where are you going? And he says, I'm going to Rachel.
He says Rachel without even
thinking about it at all.
He goes straight to it.
Like, because that's what he was
right.
trying to do.
And then they switch it, and at some point in transit, he probably called him and was like, you know, I changed my mind. He's like, you go to this other place, which probably resulted in her death, because he gets to Dent 20 seconds before.
Did you think that they switched it? That Batman changed his mind?
It had to be.
No.
What else was it?
No.
He gave him the wrong addresses.
Of course. The Joker was double... That was when... That his whole plan. And then later on, when... who are the hostages and who are the...
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
yeah,
all he...
Yeah.
And that, you know, the same exact thing was with those detonators. Exactly.
Right,
if
yeah.
they were the ones to the ship they were
on.
Because that's
yeah,
just
right.
crazy enough.
Yeah, yeah.
And if either one of those guys had been, you know what, fuck them, and pushed it, they would have killed themselves.
Right.
You, at that point, you knew that. You had to... Because he had done that, this was his that was the third twist. Mm. The first one was he told them the opposite addresses. Because he knew, they conveyed that he knew that Batman was into her.
Yeah, but I think that...
And
I
so
think
as soon
that,
as
that
he
makes
got there,
Batman's thing less interesting then. Because the whole point was that they never say that that's what happened, what you just said. It makes sense, but they never say that's what happened.
Oh, it's totally what happened.
But the thing is, that makes it much less interesting because the fact that he would choose the person that would save the city... over the person that would give him personal happiness makes him a much stronger character than if he just...
Sure it does, but he wasn't thinking in that way. And at the same time, you know, it was...
They never show him express surprise that he sees Dent there instead. He just runs in and grabs
him.
Because
once you're there, you're
there,
exactly.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Well,
I think that's
your take is that you have to assume some missing scene where he calls Gordon up in the middle and switches him?
It's not missing. It's purposely done. It's purposely done.
I think it's an ambiguity where either one of our takes can be.
Yeah,
can be,
I think
but definitely. mine has got more evidence in the film.
I don't think it has any evidence at all. It just makes
more
sense. Oh, come
on!
The
Joker's mentality is switching.
Yeah,
heads.
But they don't. There's no proof whatsoever that was the thing. They never
The other two times that he did the exact same thing where what you thought it was, what he gives you the information, but he switches it so that way you'll do what he wants. You know, you'll save Dent and not the girl that you want to save.
Right.
And Dent will hate you for it because it's his girlfriend.
Yeah, but he would have.
It's a no win. He hands him a no win situation, and then gives him a potential thought for sort of a win, and then takes it away from him.
I don't know. It's iffy. I think that it makes a lot of sense, but it also makes the character much weaker. I think that he made the choice he made because they.
No, it makes him more human. We already said that he would go for the girl.
Well, here's the thing, though. They don't. Gordon gets there, and he doesn't even know. Who's in the building he's going to.
Mm-hmm.
He assumes it's Dent, but he tells everyone immediately that Rachel died. That's why I think
he does? When does he do that?
Right afterwards. He says somebody that Rachel's dead, like right after it happens.
I think maybe maybe Batman says that he found that he found Dent.
I don't know
what's going on there. But I don't.
That's why I think that. That's why I think he made the choice somewhere to go the other way. And it's meant to be a surprise thing. That the reason it happens. That's why you wouldn't show that.
Yeah, I guess. So but I, the I thing think is, it could go either way. That in your case, it becomes a real Silence of the Lambs editorial cop out surprise. And in mine, it becomes a clear
just a
planned
bad filmmaking choice.
No. Well, in your case, it's a bad filmmaking choice. It's a gimmick filmmaking choice.
I don't think so. I think in your case,
it's the Joker.
It's assuming that the audience is going to read way too much into it.
Well, they got to. It's a character like that. Of course, you're going to read into it. Come on, you can't say that about the end when it's like the prisoners.
I thought that the whole time. But just the fact that everything that led up to that made me think that Batman just rushes right in there and grabs Dent because he thinks that it was obvious that was important to him and. Dent is mad at Batman for coming there. Yeah. Batman never says, I'm at the wrong place or anything like that.
Wayne wouldn't say that, though.
Wayne never said he was at the wrong place. Gordon never says they were sent to the wrong place. None of them ever says that. The first thing anyone says is Gordon tells someone that Rachel's dead. And that all led me to believe that there was a switch made at some point.
Okay, well, who knows? We'll have to see it again to settle that argument in another 6 months or something. But, so that's that. And so that's the big thing. Mm-hmm. Dawes dies,
right.
And we had a whole different...
Dent's face is disfigured
in a pretty straightforward way. Mm-hmm. You know, he got some gasoline on it, and then fire from an explosion residual, and it got that side of his face, and boom, makes sense. But the fact that they killed off her, I liked it. Mm-hmm. Because to bother to bring her back, who was ostensibly the weakest part of the first one... And just kind of a whatever. And then to have her in the second one again, and you're still sort of like, okay, what's going on?
Well,
what's the point of this?
She's the love interest in the second one. She's the link between
sort of
Wayne
still
and Dent.
Love interest.
And they don't kiss in the first one.
I think they do once.
They do in the second one, though. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like the same amount of love interest garbage.
And they had a very few amount of scenes together, but the chemistry they had together was pretty good, I thought, which was...
And so by Offener, they really kicked up the intensity level.
Yeah.
Because
she's a better actor than Wolves.
Yeah. And so then there you go. This movie does, because of its length and because of its structure and because you don't really know like where it's going, it does have that whole like three-ending thing.
Right.
Where like at that point, okay, now Dent is in a position to become Two-Face. The Joker is loose and just done his thing. That movie could have ended pretty much right around there on a real, like, you know, Empire Strikes Back,
yeah.
Or, you know, real down note, things still need to happen, like, lead it into the next sequel. But then it doesn't. It goes into a whole other round of activity where the Joker goes and gets the money and then burns it all
right.
On the huge pyramid of money, which is awesome. And the... And then kills
kind of nonchalantly killing that that Chinese accountant guy too.
Yeah,
because he's sitting on top of a pile of money, and they never even show the top of it again. He just lights it on fire and then walks away and starts.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe he didn't die, but he killed a bunch of. He kills that whole side of the mafia off.
Right,
and then but before that, he had gone and negotiated. Then he goes and releases Dent, who's become Two-Face now.
Right. And when he blows up that hospital, that was hilarious because it was like blowing up in a really realistic fashion. Where just the windows blowing out, and then he looks back at a while and like starts pushing the thing, and then it starts exploding more, and he runs away really quickly.
Yeah,
that was crazy.
Then he jumps into the bus that's like waiting for him.
Yeah.
So maybe some of the bad guys must have been driving that bus. I guess
that's the assumption.
He's got henchmen the whole time that he kind of gets new as he takes over more of these mafia groups. He gets their henchmen. You know, he gets the starving dogs, as he says.
Well, they do that thing in the beginning where he breaks the pool cue in half and throws the two ends and the three guys, and he says they're having tryouts for the one open spot in his gang.
That's fantastic. I didn't get the pool cue. Were they going to fight with the pool cue?
Yeah. He snapped that in half so that they could stab each other.
That's what I kind of thought.
Only two of them were going to have him at a time.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah, that was good.
That's kind of what I thought, yeah. And then it just sort of starts cycling. Then at that point, it becomes a huge deal. Like, the whole city is under terrorist watch alert.
And a fantastic thing.
And is that just because of the hospitals, or does he start threatening more crap?
No, he said something about the hospitals, but they were afraid that was going to lead to everything else. He said something about the hospitals, but he said he wanted them to clear out all the, any like institutionalized place, a hospital, a school, a jail. He wanted them all cleared out of there. So they were. That's why they were like they were getting anyone who were stuck in a place.
They thought any of that, all bets were off with this crazy guy.
And I thought one great thing that they were able to do was you take a big scale epic thing set in a big city, and a lot of time you don't really get an indication of the importance of saving anybody's life because you don't see anybody. But they do get to spend a great deal of time on people like, I mean, not a great deal, but you see Gordon's family. There's somebody who's kind of living in the crap part of town. Mm-hmm. You see the people on the ferries and everything
like that. Yeah, and there's characters within those ferries.
Yeah.
And one of them is the president from Fifth Element.
Uh-huh. Right. And you have, actually, like, during the movie last time, when you see him, everyone was like, there was like probably 17 people at the same time who were like, Debo. Mm-hmm. You just heard the word Debo come up through the thing, and I said it too, and then the guy sitting next to me was like, "Who's Debo?" And I was like, "Oh, come on, man. You don't know who Debo is."
Oh, boy.
Pathetic.
But you end up in the situation where Gordon's trying to get everyone off the island area.
That has the jail and crap part of town.
I guess that's still the Narrows or something. Yeah. And that means that people are stuck in these ferries, but then the ferries get powered down and they're all filled with barrels of fuel and about to explode, and the detonators are given to the people on, you know, they're in a box wrapped up for you, and it's like, here, you can blow up the other ferry with one has got a bunch of criminals on it because they're trying to get the criminals off in case that they're going to become part of the Joker's plan.
Right.
Gordon makes that pretty quick, abundantly clear. He's like, we got to get rid of those people. We got to get them out of there because if we leave nothing but a bunch of criminals here, then it'll be nuts. That happened once before in the first movie when all the inmates from the asylum broke out and all of the Narrows pretty much had to be shut down and turned into a giant asylum.
Right.
Which they get into very briefly in the anime. Mm-hmm. And so then here's the deal. It's like, okay, the Joker calls everybody up and says, look, you guy with the detonator on that boat, I'm going to blow your boat up. And I'm going to blow the other boat up. But you got the detonator to the other boat. If you decide to blow them up, then I'm before there. You go. Then I'm not going to do it.
It's all good.
And they're both given the choice. And so one's a boat full of criminals that, surprisingly enough, doesn't just riot and go insane and push the button.
All guys in the shotgun. No, don't want to die.
I know. I guess. But they all want to die. I guess. And then there's the good people, quote unquote, that are sitting on the other ferry
who
and
vote.
Who vote
democratically. But then they're choosing in an overwhelming favor to blow up the other boat. But no one wants to be the one who pushes.
No one wants to do it. Yeah.
And then at the same time, they have the thing. While Batman's fighting and this thing's counting down, and he's smashing through the thing, and he's beating up cops and
because the cops don't know that the Joker did his second twist,
and that those other guys are all like, for instance, Anthony Michael Hall and stuff like that. Like they're people who he's kidnapped and put on the masks on, so they'll be
the ones that the snipers take out. Exactly. That's why he picked. Why would he pick it with such great windows? Gordon says, you know, it'd be easy for snipers.
Exactly.
But the Joker factored that in, but he picked it because then he could get a nice clear view of the bay where the two ferries were, which is what he's doing. He's just hanging out up there.
Exactly. And
then no sniper got a bead on him doing that, which seems kind of funny.
Well, he was on the other side of the building.
Oh, okay.
He was just facing the water.
Yeah.
So that's the
first time where Batman has to go against Gordon.
Uh-huh.
And that's, as far as anyone else sees, because there's a few times when Batman's just there. He's in the police house, just kind of kicking, and he's got his feet up on the table. No, that hasn't happened. But it's almost like that in a few spots where it's like he's become familiar enough at the institution of the major crimes or whatever, become familiar enough with him that they, like, let him just go in and interrogate the Joker and stuff.
Right.
But at this point, it's like him and Gordon's arguing with him and saying, no, don't do this. I've got this under control, whatever. And Batman and him, like, have an argument, and Batman goes off, and Gordon gives him a little bit of time. But then Batman goes and starts kicking cops' ass. And it's like, what's going on here? And which is great as setup for, you know, the way they end the movie. And so then he gets to the Joker and, you know, the dogs again.
Yep.
You know,
they go back to the dogs.
Back to the dogs fighting him and trying to bite him.
They have a big fight and everything, And Joker the whole time has been counting on the fact that his plan at this point will have driven these people to the point of murdering each other and stuff like that in order to save themselves, and it's going to be this chaos thing. And when their humanity holds strong and they don't kill each other,
he's surprised.
That's the first time in the movie, and the only time in the movie, where you see him suddenly be like he doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like he was always kind of in control of everything that was happening. He just knew that if he lit a match, this whole thing was going to catch fire, and it did for the most part. with the cops and everything, at least, and, you know, causing riots. And the thing where he said he was going to give how much money to the person who killed the guy who said who Batman was? How much money did he say he was going to give? I don't remember.
To what guy?
The guy who came on the news show and said, I know who Batman is, and I want to announce it. And then he comes on and says, I'm going to give this much money to anyone who kills him in the next 60 minutes.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then people start shooting at him and wanted to drive their trucks into his car and all this
stuff. No, I don't think he said money. Didn't he just say, he said, I'll blow up a hospital if no one kills this guy. If no one kills this guy in the next 60 minutes, I will blow up.
He gave a reward too? Yeah, he said like $10 million or something
maybe,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
That would cover his bases.
Yeah, exactly. You know, get that way, if you don't care about the hospital, so you can at least get paid.
Yeah.
But that was another great thing was that, I mean, every single character they introduced, they tied up the ends to. The guy who is working for Lucius Fox and he asks to look over the deals comes back a second time and says, I found all this stuff and, you know, I want to basically, you know, that one of the funniest lines was like when he says, I want $10 million a year for the rest of my life for not telling who I think Batman is. And Lucius Fox goes, let me get this straight. One of the richest men in the world you think is a crazy vigilante who beats people with his fists all night long, and you want to blackmail him?
Yeah, exactly.
and the guy's like, and so he just kind of like walks away.
Well, I like that that's not how they didn't just let that end.
They didn't. Because
in real life, the guy would be like, well, I've got material here. Exactly. I can do that. I'm not intimidated.
I can blow out of the water, and I can be somebody and all this stuff. And,
and he goes to do it, but then doesn't
And then they had the thing where Bruce Wayne...
Yeah,
drives in front of that truck
with the Lamborghini,
and he's playing the dick thing. Like, I was trying to make the light, I don't know what's going on in the news. And Gordon's like, you don't know what's going on.
Do you think I should go to a hospital?
Yeah, yeah. And then he looks at the guy, and the guy realizes who he is, and he like kind of gives him one of these.
He gives him like a tiny nod.
And the guy's like, all right, cool. I guess I won't say anything.
Yeah, you know? and then that ties that up. Yeah. It really kind of does for the most part.
Absolutely.
And then even like the thing about the like nothing is thrown away in this movie. The economy of this movie, even though it's 2.5 hours long, is pretty efficient. I mean, with the exception of the whole excursion to Hong Kong,
right?
But still good action.
Yeah, right? I think that was.
But the mention of Rodriguez, one of the police officers in Gordon's major crime unit, that her mother's back in the hospital,
like,
and then that gives her rationale for being on the take with the mafia. Right. The other guy's just kind of a dick.
The guy in the bar,
the old guy. Yeah,
but she,
which is why he dies because he loses the coin flip, right? When Dent finally starts going after him. So that's all happening.
So then the Joker thing is tied up, basically. Yeah. And then, I mean, you could have ended it there as well, and they had just introduced Two-Face.
Yeah.
But now you really got a thing where he really starts taking action. And the one side of the big crime thing was cleared up by the Joker when he probably obviously killed the long-haired piece of crap mob guy when he was there with the
dogs and
the
stuff.
Dogs.
He just took that over.
Right. And then the other side was Eric Roberts.
Roberts in this movie. As soon as I saw, I almost stood up and applauded because I'm just like, wait. And then they got Eric Roberts to play a dirtbag scumbag criminal. Awesome, because that's what he's good at.
Yeah, and he went hardcore with the accent too. He really was overboard with this Italian mobster accent. So they don't show it, but they have Two-Face kind of tie that end up also.
Yeah, he happens to be the only one that survives that car wreck.
Well, put on a seatbelt.
and then his suit gets a little burned.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to fit it. Yeah.
Then you end with something that started during the whole last Joker scene, which is Gordon's family being threatened by Two-Face. And then the big moral questions, and the thing that happens in every Two-Face Batman thing every time, which is you have the power to choose. You don't have to let that thing happen. And it kind of confuses him long enough. Not really. He still flips a coin and Batman just kind of hops up and knocks him off a ledge.
Yeah, the second time.
Which is basically if you watch any episode of the animated series, it happens in every episode with Two-Face.
Pretty much. Or he happens to be at a casino and he grabs the things
of
silver dollars.
He had like a coin dispenser on his belt in Batman Forever. That was the greatest thing.
Oh, that's
like,
so stupid.
You know, like the coin dispenser that like people who work in arcades have. Ching, 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 and woo!
And throws them
just
all
in
everywhere.
Case, right?
Yeah, that
was great.
But so he just jumps him and... Well, the whole thing there at that bit of drama is it's the whole Dent being mad at Gordon for Rachel's death.
Yes.
Because Gordon had people that Dent didn't trust.
Exactly. He blames Gordon for that.
And that is all connected.
He is, like, culpable, kind of. But at the same time, you're supposed to believe that cops are working for
you do your best, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
And you know what? If you're two-faced like Harvey Dent, because you know you seem nice, but you're a dick, which is mm-hmm. why all the cops called him that.
Right.
Because he would go out. He would. I love you. You guys are good. You're doing a good job. And then he's investigating
yeah.
all of them
right.
because he's just sort of throwing out a huge net. Then it doesn't do any
right.
good. And that's his motivation is like, well, now I'm going to take something from you, kind of, and you know, I'm going to kill one of your something you love because he really loved Rachel, and then
yeah.
she got killed.
Right.
And Batman just shows up at the last minute and sort of saves the day in that respect. Though he does get shot, and you have to wonder
yeah.
if he's actually been shot.
And that's
shot.
The thing is, like, when he goes away to his bike at the end, he's clutching himself here. So he might have actually been shot at that point, you know?
It's not a good spot to be shot.
Yeah, he's, yeah.
He's shot in the upper quadrant of his abdomen.
Right.
The upper left quadrant.
It might have been his... I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
They don't really show. But, and then... The way it ends, like you were talking about how they could have ended on a downer, it still does kind of end on a downer.
Oh, it definitely does.
Because he, at that point, takes this incredibly courageous decision. He says...
Well, let's really get
into
specifically
what
happens. No one
knows that Two-Face did...
Yeah,
right,
but we didn't quite cover that. So he jumps Two-Face, basically, and then Two-Face goes off the ledge, and he saves Gordon's kid. Two-Face landed. We didn't see him die, but I guess that's the assumption.
You're supposed to assume
he's
I don't
dead.
Think he did. I argue with Blaine about this. I don't think he's dead. But.
Even though they have a funeral-ish thing
right,
for him and
right.
everything.
Which is what Batman suggested they do.
It's a big sort of cop-out-ish thing. Well, that's the truth, and that's right. There's a good reason why they
because
would keep
him. Because he mentions a thing again. Either you die your hero, you live long, become a villain. So
uh-huh.
so he says, let's kill him off, basically. You know?
Yeah. Like. Well, I think the assumption is that maybe he's dead, because you see him turn his head a little... To the good side.
Yeah, yeah.
And Batman's beat up. And then, yeah, Batman and Gordon basically go in on this conspiracy, which is very un-Batman-like mm-hmm. to say...
But it's with a very noble cause.
It's super realistic and gritty in that sense.
He basically says...
We have to lie to the public
yeah,
that this guy
killed,
is as good as
you blame on me,
yeah.
and you chase me. And the way this is going to end, and this is going to continue, is you hunt me, and I will keep doing the thing I
and
do.
He, and Dent stands as a good guy, and which, I mean, to me, the flaw in that is that the assumption is that because Dent was the district attorney when these charges were brought up on all these criminals, that if Dent is shown to be fallible, then all the evidence that's for those against those criminals falls apart. It's like someone else could try those guys.
Yeah, it wouldn't just be that, though. It would be that...
Because Dent's not going to do it because he's dead already.
But, right, but if they show that the district attorney went crazy and killed five people, then the evidence... Then they're going to throw out all those cases.
Even if the evidence is there?
Yeah.
I mean, really? Okay,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, and then
there's
going
to be mistrials and stuff. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
like
stuff's
going to
happen.
Like that.
So that basically that's what he says, is he says, I'll carry this weight.
And then they end it with Gordon telling his son basically what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's this fantastic voiceover with the incredible score and
yeah.
the brilliant cinematography of him on this... the bat cycle pod thing.
Well,
first he's
in the docks while the dogs and
yeah.
cops and shit are chasing
uh-huh.
after him. And it's that's the year one stuff. That's
mm-hmm.
the third issue of
exactly.
year one
yeah.
to a degree. It ends up in like an old abandoned. And if they do a third one, then one of the big characters is going to have to be some kind of SWAT leader in the cops. It's like an ex-military, like hardcore.
Right.
Because that's from year three, year one also, is that one of the, like, back when the whole thing was corrupt in the comic
mm-hmm.
in year one. It was really just overly, insanely corrupt to the point where it wouldn't have worked in a feature, I don't think. But one of the, yeah, some SWAT guy will be insanely after him, and
mm-hmm.
it will be like Resident Evil or something. There'll be machine gun fire everywhere
right.
and a bunch of abandoned buildings. And that's how it ends. It basically just ends with...
Hopefully they'll get Majee to direct that.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Lots of shiny lights and everything.
Right.
And yeah, so it ends with very much so a down note that they're just going to hunt him. They're going to hunt the Dark Knight, and they break the bat signal.
Right.
And it's kind of a no-win. I don't know... They've done enough with this story to make it their own thing... that they're not really beholden to anyone in terms of the comics, and it still works. I mean,
absolutely.
I'm a pretty big Batman fan, but
yeah.
I haven't really read the comics in a while.
The
but...
thing is, it really does, as you were saying earlier, it really does stay true to the whole spirit of the comic, which is, it like, despite it being in the DC universe and stuff,
yeah.
it really is like set in its own little real world thing.
Yeah,
and it really does follow that instead of other movies who you mention other characters and stuff, like the Marvel ones especially.
Yeah.
A lot of the touch of the a fantastic, even though, like, as I said before, Marvel stuff I feel is more grounded in mutant or scientific stuff, and, yeah, and the DC stuff is like gods and aliens and, yeah, things, exactly, like that, you know. I don't know. So anyway,
well, not in this case. This, no, Batman this was always purely, been about, yeah, gritty, yeah, detective, yeah, work and so forth. And yeah, so I mean, we'll have to see. I mean, we don't know where anything lies. We know that stuff's in shambles. We know that Fox has presumably resigned.
Mm. No. Well, he said he was going to resign.
No, he said I'll do this, but I'm.
He says, resigning. Consider my resignation. Then he said, I will never work for you as long as this thing is running. And then he said, type in your name at the end, and he smiles and he pushes the button and it kills everything.
Kills everything. Yeah. So I wasn't sure if that, there's still going to be some tension there, obviously. Right. And I mean, basically what you have is they will declare war on him because if he's a cop killer, that's, mm-hmm, what they're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, sure, stuff will come out that those cops were on the take and whatnot, but gosh, you have no idea.
Right.
I mean, they brought Two-Face in and then they killed him. And that's that. Maybe they didn't. You never know. But, yeah, but then that's a whole other level of really creepy stuff. Because then, like, Gordon would have to be like one of the only guys that would know where he's like being held captive. Right. That would have to do that. They would have to like put him in a hole somewhere.
I'm assuming like you put him in the asylum and no one can visit them or anything like that. You know. So I mean, because
people would know who he is.
Joker though is still alive too. You know.
Yeah, the Joker is, but not Heath Ledger.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I mean, it's interesting. It kind of leaves a lot of questions where it's almost kind of like,
well, I more like
sad
that
they can't continue it with Heath Ledger in the third one really, than it is that he is dead in real life, you know, to me.
Well,
because I don't care, yeah, about him as a person.
Exactly.
At all.
But I mean, that whole thing is rough. But they didn't kill off the villain, which, mm-hmm, was the mistakes they made in the old Batman one, is that they killed him off so they couldn't kind of bring them, mm-hmm, back. Scarecrow's still alive.
Right.
The Joker's still alive. And maybe they'll get
presumably Two-Face.
Two-Face, who knows? The Two-Face was, I mean, I think now we've covered the whole plot. We can get into things that minor weaknesses and things. The Two-Face character is a really, like, I don't know about the comic, but in the animated series, that's where I drew most of my like fuller Batman stuff,
right,
because I read the comics during like the Nightfall period and all that in the mid 90s. But other than that, I didn't really read them that much. And the whole thing is that the Two-Face has this totally like repressed emotion mentality in the series that sort of makes sense for why he would be like a split personality,
right?
And that really worked in the series. And in this, they just sort of gave him like one snapping point, and
But he always had the thing of, I mean,
he had the coin thing, but that was a kind of throwaway.
They
never conveyed any sort of like. I mean, sure, at the end they reveal that that was what they called him at the station, but they never conveyed any sort of duality in his personality, which I thought they should have tried to do on some level, just because it would have made more sense that he could switch like that.
Right.
I mean, maybe they show that he's got an extremist mentality in that conversation with Wayne about the Roman, you know, emperor stuff. You know, well, then he lives long, you know, he just kind of writes it off. You know, you go so far and then you're the bad guy.
Right.
So that, I think, was a little flaw. I think the Harvey Dent Two-Face... I don't think Harvey Dent was a weak character. I think the Two-Face side of Harvey Dent was a bit weak and forced and quick. And that was just sort of a necessary evil. I thought Alfred worked pretty well for what he was worth in that movie. I mean, he had the thing about Burma. He had the talking about how, you know, because Wayne was pretty much... being very arrogant in his take on the Joker. He was like, well, you know, he's a criminal. They all want something. You know, they all want money or whatever. And he's like, no, I've experienced working with, you know, fighting against people like this. And they're just plain bad wingnut people that just want to watch the world burn.
Right.
And in that sense, I thought he worked really well. You even got a good bit of Freeman doing his thing, being Lucius Fox, which was cool. And you got, you got a lot of Gordon, which I like.
Yeah.
I like the cop thing.
Gary Oldman's great.
Gary Oldman was just great. Yeah, he was just that. I was, when I heard about the first movie, it was kind of like you were hearing little casting things and stuff, and you're like, okay, Christian Bale, yeah, he's a good actor. Yeah. That'd be an interesting thing. Oh, Michael Caine is Alfred? That seems a little weird. He doesn't have a mustache. He looks a little different. He doesn't look like what Alfred's supposed to look like. Right. But that it's still a big actor to play such a small, a seemingly small role. It's interesting. And then I read an interview where he was like, yeah, at my age, I don't mind, you know, doing, I kind of like doing something small that can be interesting,
right.
You know, and rather than being on set every single day for 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But then I heard Gary Oldman doing Gordon, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that'll be cool. That'll work really well. That'll be interesting. And I believe that was, like, my favorite part of the first movie was just, like, seeing him being like, I don't know, I think you're trying to help, but, you know, I'm no rat. So yeah, I mean, I think that the look in the... on the cowl of the new one, I didn't, like I already said, I didn't like that design. It didn't have a sharp enough nose, which I think you need with Batman.
Much more. I mean, if you look at like publicity pictures of it, there's a lot of light on it. And the thing about this and the last film was that there's never a lot of light on him ever. He's almost always in the shadows, and when he's not, then that's it's in very low lighting. You know, it's not like he's running around like the thing that made it a real world, which was the daylight stuff. Wasn't ever Batman in the daylight, or maybe it was at one point.
At some point, he showed up at the bank early in the movie, and that was daytime. I mean, it was that blue sort of early dawn. There was a lot of that blue early dawn stuff they were playing with.
Well, a lot of that was like the indoor lighting with that stuff was just kind of like the bluish filter. And
mm-hmm.
I love Nolan's look. That I think the look of the first one was a little more pronounced, but this one was definitely more a real world looking thing. And I think they did it on purpose, but.
Well, they didn't have any of that stuff in The Narrows, which is the real Batman crime universe. Right. It's those dingy, downtrodden cities where
this just took it out to the rest of the city.
Yeah.
Kind of with the Hong Kong thing, like an extension of a real world. And
for sure.
And, you know, it made me wonder, like, how many people live in New York City?
Like, proper? Or you mean, like, Manhattan? I mean...
New York City. The city.
I want to say 6 million. That's L.A., I think, is 6
LA
million.
L.A. is actually...
But it's got sprawl three, like no
LA,
one's
LA, the
business.
City, is 3 million. And the metropolitan L.A., mm-hmm. which is all the little cities around it, is like 13.
Okay,
I think New York City is like 8 or 9.
Okay, that's...
But what the thing they said was interesting, at one point, Gordon said something about 30 million people in Gotham, which is, I think, meant to be like Gotham, the greater area. So it must be like a New York plus
district attorney, you need to know about your district.
Yeah.
As Wayne says, are you even in the city limits?
Right.
Yeah. Palisades? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Why, yeah. Come on.
Which I actually thought that was a dick move as I'm watching it. I'm like, dude, you're being a dick. He's being a dick.
Of course he's being a dick. Yeah.
But, yeah.
And you know, and for as little comparatively screen time as Bale got, you know, I was almost looking for reasons to think that his character was weak, but every single moment he got, he absolutely sold. Even when they kind of just on a dime, when Rachel dies and shows him sitting up in the penthouse and he's dropped the mask and some stuff on the ground, just sitting there in his suit, and he actually starts like crying, sitting on the chair, and you put that
he's sulking. He's not crying.
He's tearing up and he's getting all watery eyed and stuff. And a lot of actors can't just you can't just say okay. This has happened. I want you to now show some big emotion, right? Yeah. Go for it. Boom.
Yeah.
And
you're wearing half your bat suit. Too,
yeah. And he is absolutely able to convince you in each time that he is what he's supposed to be. With the Wayne stuff, it's easy enough to get an actor to say, "Hey, play a dick. You're Bruce Wayne."
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Iron Man guy does it. You know, the Robert Downey Jr. does it with the dick thing.
Uh-huh.
But he also was a dick when he was Iron Man.
Yeah,
you know?
He never really needed... And that's only one movie, and I mean...
Right.
And it does not have the mm-hmm. baggage, really, that
and it's a more jokey role and everything like that, too. But this is like, he's able to do that, and in the same scene, he changes his look just very, very slightly, and you can tell that he's very intently listening to Dent, and they zoom in on him ever so much as he's listening at the dinner table,
mm-hmm.
and you can tell he's realizing that this guy's the real deal. And,
yeah.
And he's you can see the wheels in his head turning, thinking, this is my chance out.
Yeah, this might be a way to do this. I'll usher this guy in as Bruce Wayne, the Gotham's son of Gotham City, and good. I'm golden.
Exactly. Yeah. Just great acting by. I didn't love Eckhart. I thought he was, as you said, great as Dent. I think it's a weird choice to play such a villain like that.
Yeah.
Two-Face.
Well, the only two people I've seen I just caught him last night doing publicity. I saw Eckhart on Conan last night, and I saw Gyllenhaal on Daily Show. And here's how you know, like, I mean, this is rare, because you said, like, the critics have been talking good about it. Like, yeah. You know, Blaine's been into it, and Ryan, and even you a little bit, and you've been skeptical, and I'm skeptical, of course, too. And then you hear, like, Conan was saying, like, this movie's great, and the critics are loving it, and yeah. I liked it. And then Stewart's like, this movie's awesome, and he's talking about other comics, because he's a comic geek. He mentions the M-Cron crystal at one point in the interview with Gyllenhaal. And, I mean, you know, Gyllenhaal and Eric Eckhart, who come from these more small, independent, they both sort of talked about that. And
Neil LaBute guys.
Yeah, they jokingly kind of said, you know, that it's great to be part of a big movie like this. Yeah. I should do it more often or something. And they both kind of, I don't know, kind of downplayed it, or whatever, seemed like, acted a little like they were too good for it, which was like, screw you guys. But they both were kind of, you know,
no one was too good for this. Laurence Olivier and Peter O'Toole would have been in it.
Exactly. You know, so I mean, it was probably was a little tough for Eckhart to play the weirdo villain, because it's like, wait, I'm just in a bad mood now, right? And that's pretty much how, and that's, I think, the, that's why I think the Two-Face character is the biggest flaw there in the story. But where, only if you're, it's only a problem if you're doing the comic geek thing and you're trying to, and you know how Two-Face is supposed to be all complex and stuff. He's not supposed to be created by the Joker as part of a cog of a.
It was always a scheme. It was always the mob thing that created him, because the original comic storyline, which is the animated series, is some dude in the stand throws some acid in his face,
Rupert, and he covers Thorne. Half
it. Yeah, I think one thing that we're not really remembering here and talking about is, I mean, you don't know what kind of strain it's going to take on you if half your face gets burned off and suddenly.
Well, and your girlfriend, wife is killed. Yeah.
So I mean, it's
justified.
It's very justified. It's very plausible that he has an utter psychotic break.
It is as a regular character.
Right.
It's flawed as the Two-Face character in the world of Batman. When you sit there and you're like, wait a minute, he's built up to this level. He's been this character the whole time. Then something bad happens to him, and that turns it on, and his face gets burned, and those combinations do that to him.
Right.
But, I mean, even in the animated series, they started building it up little bits. I mean, they had Harvey Dent in, like, a whole bunch of episodes before it became Two-Face in that two-parter.
Right.
I mean, Poison Ivy poisoned him, and so he'd been betrayed by a woman that he was going to marry. He was like, and all that had happened, too. But, so I think it would be tough. Eckhart was good as Dent, and then just played like a guy that had lost it at the end for the other one. And that can seem tough, but who knows?
Right.
Eric Roberts was fantastic. Uh-huh. Oh man, that was so perfect.
There were so many moments that, like I said, that watching those people last night, like things that I would just think were kind of cool when they happened, but people just exploded. And when he's like, "You're not going to kill me from this fall," and he's like, "I'm counting on it," he drops it, and everyone was like, "Yeah!" Because you hear his legs break.
Yeah.
At the same time, like 100 people in there went, "Oh!"
Exactly.
Like,
that would hurt.
Yeah. You know, like it was really
might have broken his pelvis. Actually,
who knows? I mean, yeah, he was walking with looked like strain on his hip or something when he was walking with the cane later, but it a lot of times I get bugged watching those first things because people like. For instance, I've always talked about the Star Wars with the Episode 2 thing when Yoda walks in the room and with Dooku, and people are like, "Yeah, Yoda, kick his ass."
Yeah, I hate going to see movies with other people.
But this was actually, every single time they exploded anything was completely justified because this movie absolutely earned it. It absolutely earned that respect.
Pretty much true, but you still sometimes don't care about other people's opinions.
Yeah, no,
you just want to watch it and let the drama do its own
thing. Just wondering how much it actually affected me because what I'm saying is it never, ever affects me, and usually it turns me off, and in this case, it did not at all.
Well, you got the audience. See, in this case, you got brainwashed. You got the audience effect, and that's, and I did too. I mean, I went to an early showing, and there was almost very few people, so I lucked out. And it always bothers me. But that's the whole thing. It's like everybody was, critics were saying it was good. I'm a Batman fan. Of course I'm going to want to see it. Everybody was just on board saying this is a good movie. It's so rare nowadays to have like that kind of front-loaded expectation delivered and then given and then be justified, like you said. It's like everyone talks so great about all movies nowadays. Not and even some critics
before they even see it.
Critic reviews are never even that great, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like such a letdown. And finally, you know, you go a couple weeks later, and you find out, you know, it's not that great or whatever. But for this, it lived up to it, and it was awesome. I mean, it's like one out of every you know 50 movies ends up being like as good as it's hyped or whatever.
Right.
And everyone's on board. And so that's why I think you, like you said, because it was justified. Mm. If it was just fucking Indiana Jones, exactly, and you yeah. saw it on opening night with a bunch of people that were super gonna like it anyway, they'd be all, yeah, when Shia was swinging on the vine, and you would hate it even more.
That's what was funny is that I did see it at midnight, and when it opened, people were cheering. The first time you see the hat, people were cheering.
Yeah, that's right. And then they stopped.
And then it started going downhill, and then afterwards you hear people grumbling. Like, yeah. You know, the guy, someone, like, when he was swinging the vine, someone was like, what? Like, yeah. You can hear some people doing that, you know?
Yeah, they've lost the touch. And I think you're right. Someone like Nolan is really in a position to do, I mean, God, I hate saying this because I love it when good directors are doing awesome movies mm-hmm. that can, like, this can show, has shown that it's like it's an effective crime drama, but it's still a comic book. But I mean, this movie is so huge. Like I said, it's epic and big and in a real sense, on a big scale. I just keep saying real, but I mean, just two of the trailers for this movie, which both look pretty cool. Frank Miller, The Spirit, and Watchmen.
Watchmen looks amazing.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that.
Are both going to probably be very heavily CGI because it's Zack Snyder and it's Frank Miller, who's essentially just Robert Rodriguez.
Just ripping off Robert Rodriguez and he's never directed.
And I'm like, you know what? Okay, for some style, that's cool. But Nolan goes and says, okay, look, everyone's doing stuff on green screens and they just need the five people that they need and a few props.
Let's blow up
and
do it for cheap.
And Nolan says, let's go do all this for real. Let's make this an epic crime movie.
Let's smash buses through walls,
blow up hospitals, IRL. Let's go to Hong Kong.
Let's crash a bunch of cars.
Let's go to Hong Kong. Let's negotiate with Red China here and make that happen. Let's make it as big as it
There's
is.
There's
more
and like pink China now.
It's like a Die Hard movie or something. It's huge.
And
it's more epic than Heat. Heat has a couple good sequences, but Heat isn't really about being epic. It's about the city of LA on some level, and it's about cops and robbers. Yeah. It's more about the intimate cops and robbers.
It doesn't affect the entire city. This infects every single person in the city. Here's the thing about Christopher Nolan. A lot of directors are lauded for their stylistic thing. Guillermo del Toro has this really, really great style. Hellboy 2 is fantastic looking. He has some fantastic character designs. And I don't think he's reached the point where Pan's Labyrinth was really pretty much there. So is, I think, Devil's Backbone. But where you take something that's that good storytelling-wise with the fantastic visuals. Until Zodiac came out, I don't think you can say that about David Fincher either. Because his stuff was always so very incredibly stylistic visually. And there were a lot of problems with the storytelling aspects of it.
Seven was still pretty good story as a crime story.
Seven's just kind of like a...
And a twist. Well, for what it's for its time.
Gratuitous gross you out.
Yeah, but for its time, though.
Yeah, but I mean, and take something like... I mean, what I'm talking about is Christopher Nolan is on the lines of someone like Peter Jackson and able to completely flesh out characters and take this story and absolutely... making this incredible thing, and then on top of that, have mind-boggling visuals. That the reason why people come see some of this stuff usually is because of the visuals. You go in and you see the visuals, and you're like, "Wow, that looked good," and then you leave. And then other movies, you go in and it's directed by someone like, I don't know, Sidney Pollack, where it's just like, "Hey, shoot that," you know, like some guy who just sets up some camera angles.
That was a bad choice because Sidney Pollack did Out of Africa.
That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is characters and story.
You
take a director who wants to tell a story and get great acting.
Jim Jarmusch.
It doesn't matter how
it
looks,
like
really.
That,
it looks fine, but they cycle through cinematographers and it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And then you got someone who just only goes for a look, or mostly goes for a look. And then you have the people who can combine the two, where neither one of them overpowers each other, and they are completely equal.
That's true.
And I think Nolan is absolutely at the pinnacle of that level, as Peter Jackson.
Because what Nolan is doing, or what he did in Memento, that's a very stylized movie.
Absolutely.
But it all works, it serves the story.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so what he did in the first Batman, is very less stylized as a Batman movie, but it's got some stylism. But it some totally stylism. Served
the story. The way they were able to distort images of him because of the Scarecrow gas stuff was just awesome.
And in the Prestige, you had that world look, created, man. And everything.
What a look!
I mean, really, I think as I was getting towards the end, you talk about the hospitals blowing up and stuff. I'm sitting there and I'm like, this movie must have been very expensive to make.
Had to be. It's going to make so much money though.
That. Of course.
You put a movie like this in his hands, and it's going to make.
And that's great.
Incredible.
But this guy, I'm sitting there and I'm like, this guy could be like the next David Lean or something, because he could do huge, movies that are huge, and he's shown that he can do that.
This is going to legitimize this type of movie. It's going to legitimize the action movie. Not even calling it a superhero movie, an action movie. There are movies that have reached that level before, but almost on like satire value or something, you know? This is
unironic.
It is. It's like Godfather, like, you know. It really is on that level. It's really
good.
Yeah.
I give it an A.
I give it an A. I'm probably on an A plus. I like to say A plus, but I'll say A plus.
Yeah, pretty darn near. And that's just that. I think.